Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. On today's episode, we have Coach Raniak, who's huge advocate for Division III, provides a ton of platform and opportunity for Division III athletes to, you know, earn their degree at the Division III level, but also be able to explore and venture out into the pro world in terms of basketball. And he's currently the head coach of the We Are D3 team, which plays in the basketball tournament for $1 million prize. And he's just a really good guy that is continuing to improve and evolve the landscape of Division III basketball. So what you think about Coach Raniak in this episode?
Man, Coach Raj, it was definitely a good episode. You know, we were planning it for a while, just going back and forth, texting, trying to find different dates. And eventually we were able to, you know, find a date to lock in on. And it was a great episode. Like, we asked him a lot of different questions about, you know, the D3 landscape or his own journey with coaching, and he answered all of them, you know, and he told us he loved the podcast. So that's obviously like support. He's supporting us too. And I love what he's doing too with the We Are D3 TBT thing to give guys opportunities like that, you know, at that stage where it's on ESPN. So like, there's a lot of eyes on you that are watching. Right. So Coach Reg, great guy. And I'm glad we have him in our corner.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned, like when the guests say that they've been listening to the podcast, it always makes me feel some type of way. I like that a lot. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
But also, Coach Raniak has just a ton of insight and thoughts. He's been involved for in Division III since his playing days at Springfield College and still today. So that's almost 20 years plus of being involved. He talks a lot about the landscape of Division III, how the transfer portal has affected Division III, COVID, just a ton of different things you can learn about Division III, the future Division III, what he's seen. So this is just an enjoyable episode. And we got some news coming up with Coach Raniak and We Are D3. So I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, this was something that we talked about after the episode was over, but, you know, you and I like floated the idea to Coach Reg about, you know, us coming in to a combine that they're having. And they're having the We Are D3, a combine on May 18th. It's going to be at Lehman College, and it's going to be a lot of top players from Division III and probably other levels too are just going to be there and competing for a spot. One, to play on the We Are D3 team, but also an opportunity to play overseas because you're going to be playing in front of like scouts and agents. They're going to be doing testing. And we floated the idea to him about us going into the combine and like interviewing some of the players. So we're going to have like our own little section where the players do the testing. And after they're done with the testing, they'll come to us and sit down and we'll interview them. And it's just a great opportunity for us just to be there and talk to these players and just network. And I'm really excited for this opportunity, KJ.
Yeah. So more about that. After we're done interviewing, we'll make it condensed and one big episode with just the great Division III talent that this this division has to offer. And I think you guys will be surprised. We'll have some clips, you know, just what I've been trying to say is that there's just a ton of great talent. And I hope that after this pro combine, when they actually get to the TBT, first win is coming. And we talk about that with Coach Raniak. They're 0-5. We are D3 in the TBT, which even though they've been losing, it's just another year of development and getting more eyes on Division III. So either way, just having that team is special. But now I definitely see them getting a win or two or even more in this TBT. So it's definitely going to be a good time at the Pro Combine. We're big fans of the We Are D3 team. Everything Coach Raniak's doing, great guy. And hope you guys enjoy the episode. Let's get into it. All right, we're here with Coach Raniak. How you feeling today, Coach?
Doing well, brother. Doing well. Look forward to talking with you guys. I finally got on here, you know, a couple legends before me. So I feel good.
Yeah, this is a long time coming. We've been playing this for a minute, so I'm glad that we were able to get this going.
Absolutely. You know, kids take up a lot of life. a lot of time of the day, but no, it's all good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You're a father and you have your own interests. So what's like the day-to-day life for you today? And also, I noticed on your Instagram that your son's in AAU basketball. So what's that like, being a father of a son playing sport?
Yeah, you know, it's actually my daughter. She plays like a dude, which is awesome. So I'll take it. No, it's, you know, like the day-to-day, like I'm very thankful with my job and the career with kind of where I'm at, because I can be a part of these experiences with my kids. My daughter is going on to be 11 in about a month. My son's 8. I get to coach them. And obviously the day-to-day, like really, I work a lot with, you know, NCSA and IMG Academy, talking with families about recruiting and what it means. And obviously I'm working a lot on the pro side of things with the We Are D3. We got a pro combine coming up in May, which should be phenomenal. And obviously getting ready for the tournament this summer. So a lot of the kind of, you know, balls up in the air, but it's very much manageable because I do have that ability to be home a lot now with my kids, and not being some random AAU tournament in Spooky Nook, Pennsylvania, paying like $40 for parking. So like that's like, you know, like, but you know, it's a, you know, it's a good kind of balance for me right now, and obviously it allows me to continue to have all those interactions and coaching that I love, and kind of learn and grow within the game, and kind of continue to go on my journey as well as a coach. And so like you know, it's a good time. It's a good time right now.
So this is kind of an interesting discussion, because we talked with a couple other coaches that, you know, have kids that play sports, and they talk about maybe, you know, as because they're a coach, maybe they step back in terms of how, you know, hard on them when they are with basketball, or how they even like talk to them about basketball. So your kids are starting to get older now. So how has that transition been for you?
It's very unique. It's very unique because as a coach, you know, you never want to be the parent that you've seen in the stands go after you. Like, you know, we've all been a part of those loud crowds. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's giving your kid an opportunity to be there to support them, but they got to be, you can't give them all the answers to the test. So they got to figure it out on their own. And you know, it's one of those things where it's really cool to see kind of my daughter and my son kind of work through it and work through their adversity, but not me solve it for them.
Yeah.
But yet, if I'm there, they need a resource. You know, not to toot my own horn, but I'm a pretty good one for them. But it's one of those things where, as a parent and you're a coach, the lessons that you can teach, you know, there's something to be said about a coach's kid. I always love recruiting coaches' kids. I always love, you know, interacting with coaches' kids, because, you know, typically if you're a coach's kid, you're being taught a lot of different lessons that maybe some of the normal student athletes might be missing out on, some of the nuances. But, you know, it's like it's sometimes I do want to step in and things on those lines. And, you know, coaching decisions, I do question a lot, but I keep them to myself. And, you know, their coach is their coach, and I'm just dad, and it allows me to be just dad, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting that you brought up, like you kind of not favor, but you respect a little bit more the coach's kids, just because they have a different insight compared to regular kids. So that's interesting. But let's start at the top of Coach Reg's career and life. Yeah. You're from Western Massachusetts, which is the birthplace of basketball, a ton of history in the state of Massachusetts. And you also play college basketball at Springfield College, which is in Massachusetts. So just talk about what early life was like for you, when you developed a love for the game of basketball, and how you think being from a deeply historic state in Massachusetts impacted your career.
Yeah, I think like, so growing up in West Mass, like, and like, when I was going through it, like I grew up on a dirt road in Massachusetts in a hill town that wasn't like my best. I was an only child. So like literally like my best friend growing up was a squirrel. So like literally all you had to do is like literally we just hooped. And, you know, I had a, you know, kind of with that kind of going through, I remember just like everybody in my generation, like, you grow up, you turn on NBA on NBC on Saturday, because a lot of us didn't have cable back then. And literally you would watch, you know, I remember seeing Michael Jordan. I remember playing the Pistons back in the early 90s, and he went off that game. And ever since then, you know, I was hooked. You know, my dad and mom were big sport fans as well. So they kind of fostered that growth within me. But really, when it came to kind of Western Mass, I was, you know, the Basketball Hall of Fame was maybe 30 minutes from my house, you know, on 91 there, or, you know, Mass Pike. And literally, we would go there, and it's not what it was now. Like, when I was there, it was very dated, very gross. But it was still, like, you know, basketball, you know, royalty. When I was coming to looking at what schools to go to, and mind you, again, we didn't have internet, I think, back then. You know, I might look like I'm 15, but I'm an old timer. But, like, we had to, like, AOL, which was god-awful. But really, when you looked at schools, like, I was like, all right, I want to eventually – I always knew I wanted to be a coach eventually, because I knew NBA necessarily wasn't in the cards for me. You know, when you're looking at education degrees and coaching and basketball, the Springfield College is a no-brainer. And that was, like, literally, you know, half hour from my house. It was perfect. I could go home when I wanted to. We had a great leader of the program and Coach Brock at the time, Coach Charlie Brock, who was a longtime D3 advocate, who was on the rules committee and was a legend, for our division. So I knew the experience was going to be awesome, and it was. It really kind of formulated my early years, and I felt like I was put on a fast track to educate student athletes, because that's what Springfield did. That's what Coach Brock did for me. And it kind of just really just set me up for my career when, after, you know, I graduate, I can become a graduate manager and coach, and really open up my world to things that I didn't even know existed at that time, because I just thought I was going to, you know, be a phys ed teacher maybe, and you know, maybe coach on the side. And, you know, it really kind of opened up the world for me, you know, in my early 20s, and really kind of saying, all right, what is possible down the line? And it was pretty awesome to see. And it, you know, really set the tone, you know, for me as I was going through my early years in coaching and playing and so on and so forth.
So what ultimately made you want to get into coaching? Like, all right, I want this to be my full-time career. I want to hear a little bit more about that.
I didn't want to get a 9-to-5. You know, I think, like, anything, when you find your passion, no matter where it is in life, it could be business, could be architecture, engineering, whatever. When you have that passion, whatever it is, it's never a job. For me, it was sports, it was basketball, it was teaching and modeling young men and women to be better versions of themselves. So when I had that opportunity, like, I knew I would never work. Like, and it was just kind of, I've been able to kind of mold my career like that and have those experiences. Whereas if you made me, like, I was pretty good at math, if you made me some sort of in the sciences, you know, like, I like math, but is it my passion? No, it's still work. I've never had to work, you know, really a day, even my most stressful days as a coach or as a leader of a program or whatever, it's still way better than what I could be doing any day of the week. So, like, I think, like, that's where I think it's been just such an awesome, I've always knew I wanted basketball to be a part of it. And I just had to figure out how I could make money doing that, you know, so that I wouldn't be living at my parents' house till I was, like, 50, you know? And so, like, I think that's where that's been really beneficial for me. And I just kind of figured it out along the way, just like 90 billion of us coaches figure it out, you know, like, for the same reason why, you know, job postings for coaching, like, you could pay, like, a can of tuna fish and bread, and you would get 90 billion applicants for that assistant job. Like it's a tragedy. It's a joke, but it really is, because you're passionate about what you do. And I could go on a tangent and say, hey, why we're being exposed and taken advantage of as coaches, but I digress.
I want to hear a little bit more. This is actually a really interesting conversation, because you talk about how, you know, D3 coaches especially like coach because they love the game, but sometimes they're not always in it for the money or the fame. So I want to hear about the early years of your coaching career and the struggles that you could have encountered. Just, you know, I see here online that you were at TCNJ, Plymouth State, and Springfield. So I want to hear about those, you know, first few years.
Yeah. Poor. Very, very, very poor. And I think when I was at the college in New Jersey, I'm out of state. Yeah. A great program at the time. And I coached under John Castaldo, and great leader. But the master's program, I got a degree in sports administration that was taken care of. Awesome. My stipend was $2,000 for the year.
Damn.
Not for nothing, for the year in Jersey to get an apartment, that might be 2 months.
Yeah.
Like, if that. So, you know, how do you supplant income? You get side gigs, you just grind, you're tired because you're doing film breakdowns till 2 or 3 in the morning, and then you got to do classes, and then you got to do your job to earn some money so that you can pay rent and things on those lines. You basically are learning how to understand navigating real life scenarios, because mom and dad are in Massachusetts. They're not going to bail you out. You're in Jersey. You got to figure out how to eat. You know, it's really kind of one of those grinds where, hey, like you see this light way down the end of the tunnel, and you're hoping that if I work hard enough, you'll get there. But it is a lot of grinding and just immersing yourself in the job and immersing yourself with being a sponge with everything that you work towards, so that you can get that job at the end of the day or whatever. But like, I remember just in Plymouth State, just to recruit a student athlete, we would have to drive like 3 hours one way to go see a kid in Connecticut. That is god awful. Like, what job does that, where you have to drive 3 hours to see a kid, maybe play like 15 minutes in a high school game, and maybe you like him, maybe you don't, and then you got to drive 3 hours back, and you continue to do that repeatedly over and over again. It is, because like the recruiting services and things like that, like they weren't really around back then. So like, really, you had to do a lot of live evaluation, but it was a lot of grinding, you know, for little to nothing. And you're the only currency that you were earning was knowledge and experience. And so like, I think like going into that, you know, it's, you have to understand that that's what it is. And your social life is going to be your fellow assistant coaches that are on the road with you. It's not like you can go home whenever you want, because you're at the mercy of the coach, because that is your profession. So it's a very humbling experience, but I think that character stuff is kind of what our division is all about.
Yeah.
You know, like I saw something of like a couple of weeks ago when I retweeted it, like, oh, like Mark Pope from Kentucky is picking up his recruit at an airport, and I've never seen anybody do this before. D3 coaches do that all the time. Like, I was picking up kids from like random bus stops in the middle of like Boston. Like, get out of town. Like, you know, have some awareness like of what the other divisions do. I just think it's just a, you know, when you haves and have nots, and like Division III, more, we have a great division, but we're mostly a have not blue collar group, whether you're at Amherst or, you know, Basket Weaving Tech. You know, we're all kind of in the same boat together. We're just different levels of it.
Yeah. You talked about how coaching never really felt like work for you. You were so passionate and you loved it, just being around the game. But obviously there's some societal pressures or family pressures, like you got to start paying bills. So were there ever moments in your career where you felt like I might try to move away from coaching?
Absolutely. And I think you see that with young coaches nowadays. When you start to enter the real world and of the like, you know, we talk about it, it's a young man's game. But also, like, when you become a head coach now, and then you got to support a family, and you're getting paid, you know, marginally as well. That's why we're losing a lot of great coaches too at this level too. Mm. You know, like, it's not like we're getting paid six digits. No, like, I remember my contracts that I had. I remember some of my colleagues now that still work and what they get. I don't know how they support their family on some of these contracts, because it's absolutely a tragedy. So absolutely. And I mean, that's where you lose a lot of great young assistants. You lose a lot of great young head coaches that either move up in division or get out of the business and kind of go into the business side of things. I can say from my own experiences, what I experienced with NCSA and IMG, I'm not complaining about what I get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, like, not for nothing, like, you know, and that's a big factor. You know, when you get older in the game, you know, you start learning how the business is run and of the like, you don't want to get played.
I'm kind of curious. You talked about how, like, we're D3 might be suffering because we're losing these head coaches and assistant coaches because there just isn't that money influx coming into the division. Mm-hmm. You might not have an answer for this, but do you have any ideas or suggestions to allow Division III to either make more money or just be able to pay these coaches more?
I don't. I wish I did. I think it's about investing in your talent, right? I think there is something culturally about basketball where I forget which school it was. It might have been one of the schools in the CUNYAC, whatever. It might have been Hunter, or it might have been something else, where literally this was a head coaching gig that was advertised, and it was part-time for $10,000, and you're expected to win. You're expected to recruit. You're expected to be an ambassador of the college. And my guess is they probably got a ton of applicants because people want to be because of our passion for the game. Mm-hmm. Not for nothing. That is god awful. And that is where a lot of our, I think collectively as a group of coaches and things like that, until we say, hey, we're going to take a stand, I don't think anything will change, because those administrators, and I'll get on my soapbox, they know that they can pay bare minimum and they'll still be getting a lot of talent, because that young assistant might be looking for that first head coaching job and just kind of really will be willing to sacrifice. Yeah. But I think, and I've talked about this with my former head coach, Coach Hickson, you have to invest. If you invest, you'll get a great talent pool. If you don't, then you're going to get still a pool. I just don't know how deep the talent is. Yeah. You're not going to draw the big fish. So I think you get what you pay for in a lot of these regards. Like, that's why a lot of NESCAC UAA jobs are really high in demand, obviously, because they value and they pay well. And obviously you can tell by the level of their programs too, because they're a high level top 25 programs. But I think until that happens, I don't know if it will ever change. But I think that's also why you're starting to see a lot of, you know, smaller D3s without a niche starting to shut down. We just had another one, you know, a couple weeks ago, Wells by you guys, just shut down. And Casanova the year before. And my guess is there's a couple by me that will shut down in the Hudson Valley, because their admissions are struggling. And when you don't have admissions, you can't pay. When you can't pay, you're going to get a crappy coach. When you get a crappy coach, the program goes in the tanker. It's just a cycle going around and around.
Yeah, no, that's good insight. And you mentioned someone I definitely want to continue to talk about, Coach David Hickson. Mm-hmm. One of your earlier stints in your career, you coached at Amherst for four seasons. Mm-hmm. And Coach Hickson is a legendary coach. He's got a ton of respect in Division III, but also basketball as a whole. I was reading some of his about him, and he coached 42 seasons at Amherst, 826 wins throughout his career, and he was the third fastest coach in all the divisions to reach 800 wins. So he's definitely just like he's up there amongst the greats. And today his 826 wins ranks 15th on the most all-time wins in all of basketball. So I'm curious what your relationship with Coach Hickson was, what you learned from him, and kind of like how he impacted your career.
First of all, I do got to correct you. It's Amherst. Don't pronounce the H. You got to be a local. All right,
Amherst.
You got to be a local. But no, like, so I ended up when growing up in Western Mass, like Amherst College was one of those schools that also was like about maybe 40 minutes from my house. I ended up going to his day camp, you know, when I was a young kid. So I got to know Coach Hickson knew me when I was like in like fifth, sixth grade in that group. So I kind of kept that relationship. But when I applied to the job, like it was, I was coming out of Plymouth State. We had a marginal year if best, you know, at that. And I just put in my application. I was like, I'm just hoping for a callback. I ended up getting the job. And it was, I honestly think that point of kind of my career. Because learning under Coach Hickson, just the day-to-day and the staff, like at that time, there was a longtime assistant, Ron Bulow, who was there, is still was, you know, very much tied to Coach Hickson's success because he played a part in it as well. But learning under those two was the greatest gift that the basketball gods could give me. And I think like it wasn't necessarily the winning and things like that. It's just the way he fostered the culture of the program and kind of how we were at that time. Like if there was such and such a dynasty in Division III, that was it. That was the dynasty. You can see it if you go in that gym right now, like a crap ton of banners are on there because of that time between 2000 to when he retired.
Yeah.
So like we're talking almost 20 years of elite excellence. And it wasn't because, you know, he had these great X's and O's and defensive schemes. And he did, don't get me wrong, but the way he ran his culture of his program and the relationships, that's what really, in my opinion, catered to, you know, the 42 years of excellence. And reality is, like, it took him to build Amherst to what it became a long time, like in the 80s and so on and so forth, kind of up and down a lot of up and down. It wasn't like the 30-win seasons or the 28-win seasons were coming there. No, he really kind of worked. He got hired as a young assistant. And he grinded and learned to run a program. I'm not sure if in today's day and age, ADs always want the quick fix. I don't know if that would have been allowed to have built his program in today's environment. Just because everybody's in that win now mentality. They don't view the growth of a program. So, you know, with Coach and myself, it was so, and I'm still like, I bounce ideas off him. You know, we talk fairly frequently all the time. We golf when I can get up to Massachusetts and so on and so forth. We golf together and he busts my chops. But, you know, that was when my career took a turn to really kind of on the fast track, because what I learned from him, what I learned from Coach Bulow, what I learned from that team that I coach was really kind of shaped, you know, really kind of where I'm at right now. And it's been kind of crazy to think that one simple yes of a hire will do that. And that one application that I put in, and that I still remember how nervous I was that day interviewing, because they're coming off of a national title and here I am in interviewing for a job, is pretty stressful. But, you know, talk about what a blessing it was and has been for my life.
You guys had a lot of history together in just your four seasons there, three trips to the NCAA tournament. And I want to talk about one specific season. You know, you talked about they just won the NCAA tournament. Next year, you're on the staff. You guys make it back to the national championship. And that year, you guys finished 27-4. You were marching through the NCAA tournament, took a tough loss in the national championship to a great team in Walsh U. But I just want to hear, like, when you knew that team was a little bit special, did you think throughout the year, like, this is possible, we might go back-to-back? And talk a little about the challenges, you know, of being defending champions and going through that season.
Yeah, I mean, that the amount of pressure of that year was crazy. Coach Hickson never let it onto it. But being a new guy in the room, I felt it. Because you have everybody essentially come back. Now, they had some really key seniors that they lost that were pieces in the wheel. But the National Player of the Year, Andrew Olson, was returning. You had a great group of seniors, a lot of which right now are Division III head coaches, like Matt Goldsmith, who's the head coach at College of New Jersey. Kevin Hopkins, who's the head coach at Muhlenberg. You had Fletcher Walters, who I actually named my son is named Fletcher as well. And it's largely because, you know, you're going through names and you're like, Fletcher, oh, I like him. You know, he was 6'7" lefty that could do everything. Love him. All right. So, you know, you name your kid Fletcher. But there were so many pieces to that group and the whole team in general. Brandon Jones was another, like, he went after his career ended, he went to the G League, like, for the Springfield Armor. So, like, that group was crazy talented. And when you're ranked number one defending national champion all year, it was anything less than making the national championship game was going to be a failure, like, essentially. And, you know, I think that game against Wash U, they had a player, Troy Roos, who played out of his mind and very talented. Like, that started also like a Wash U type of dynasty in that kind of little realm there. Very talented. I think if we played 10 times, I would say we win 7 out of the 10. But I think that night, they were an amazingly coached team. They played really well. I think just we looked off the entire night. You know, we had a great staff. Like I was talking about, you know, before we were offline, but, you know, we had Kobe Altman, who's president of operations at the Cavs. So it was myself, Kobe Altman, Ron Bula, Dave Hickson. Not for nothing. That's a dream team staff. So I'll take it. But you know, that night, you know, Wash U played the better. But I think overall that team at Amherst, like, it was just like perfect stars aligning for that class to come together. And that's largely because of, you know, coaches, assistant coaches, you know, recruiting. I just stepped into that team. I always, like, because of that group, you made that first year. And then the years after, it made me have a false sense of reality. Also how tough it is to win. Like, I mean, when you're rolling teams and you're just, you have the best player in the country and Andrew Olson, who, like, literally could score 2 points a game, but he would have 18 assists. And he was by far the best player, you know, on the court and throwing alley-oops and of the like. But that team was very talented as well. But, you know, it was really to have that pressure day in and day out. Like, I give that team a ton of credit. And, you know, it's kind of was, you know, very lucky to be a part of it.
So I think this is a really interesting discussion, just talking about how, you know, you coming into a winning program and you guys are, you know, going to the national championship game and going to the NCAA tournament, you know, every year. And sometimes it's not really a reality for some Division III programs. You know, sometimes they can go long stretches without even making the final of their conference tournament. So, you know, it makes me, you know, interested to ask you. So you got hired at SUNY New Paltz in 2011 in July, and you were there for almost 5 years or 6 years rather. And, you know, you talk about, you know, being under Coach Hickson and how, you know, you saw how he built the program with the culture and how that was the turning point of your career, just being under him. So talk about that transition from becoming an assistant coach to a head coach and some of the challenges that you saw in those first early stages.
Moving 6 inches over is astronomically different. And you're on an island because nobody understands, not even your significant other. You can't talk to anybody about your program problems. Nobody cares. It's cutthroat. Like when I got hired, I think across all of NCAA, I was like the third youngest head coach in all of North America. So like, I'm a really young pup, you know, like, and I'm going against some real big sharks. And at that time, the Suniac wasn't what it is now. They were perennially getting in 3 to 4 teams in the NCAA tournament. Now it's really just Oswego. Like everybody else is just playing for second place trophies and things like that. Although New Paltz won it this year, and credit to them. But like reality is like, it's a conference of Oswego, maybe Brockport too, and everybody else.
Well, Brockport's coming to join us in the E8 now.
That's right. And everybody, and the conference will be disbanded in like, you know, by maybe in a couple months from now, this will all be dated. But like, and everybody will go either to the Skyline Conference or Mac Freedom or E8 or whatever. Yeah. But I think what I learned was the benefit of resources that we had at Amherst. And if I could go back and tell myself, yes, getting a head job is important, no doubt. But you have got, there is a reason why certain programs, and Neruda, you were talking about this, certain programs have been perennially average at best. And it's either going to boil down to a couple things. It's either going to boil down to the facilities being god-awful. It's going to be boiling down to administration not supporting athletics or just thinking it's secondary. Or you're working for administration that doesn't support you and kind of what you want to do. And by that, I mean, like, whether it be how you want to grow the program, whether it be recruiting, giving you, you know, spots to help get into school that obviously would be good ambassadors for the college, not, you know, you got to be able to recruit and get players and grow the program. If you cannot get the players you want into your program, I don't care how good a coach you are. And I learned that very quickly. Like, I, not for nothing, toot my own horn, I think I'm a pretty darn good coach, but if you give me not so good players and not give me the avenue to get there, it's going to be, I don't care how good I am or how good Bill Self is or Dave Hickson or, you know, John Calipari, you're just going to be average at best. And I think like, that's where I learned really quickly that I necessarily wasn't getting the support to kind of really, for my vision of what I wanted it to be and do and things like that. You can only squeeze blood from a stone so much.
How do you kind of try to combat that problem of the university or school not being so supportive? Is that a conversation you try to have up front, or how'd you try to manage that?
It's either you gotta change or you gotta find change. And I found change. So like, you know, it was one of those things where like, I was like, you know, like you're going to be over here. All right, cool. This is peace, deuces. So it's one of those things where, and I think like the landscape of today's Division III, and we'll talk about, it's just different. It's very different. The 4-year players, you hope you have them. And if you do have them, then you got something. I don't care what level of the 4-year players you have are, but that's difficult to do just because as a culture in basketball and sports just in general. So like you can have those conversations, but at the end of the day, if the AD or the administration ain't going to support you, it's not like it's like refereeing. I have never changed a referee call. You're not going to change the administration's decision no matter how much, you know, like, because it's going to boil down to budget and things like that. And, you know, not for nothing. If your school values athletics, then they view it as like the window to the house. It's the porch to the house. If not, and you're in the shed, well, it ain't going to work. You know, and I think like that's where going back with young coaches looking for jobs, you really got to take a hard look at that. Like a hard look at the history and coaching and things like that. Because I do think that there's – you'll catch a flash in the pan. But if you see like a team out of nowhere have a great year, well, then chances are that coach is going to go because they know that they caught lightning in a bottle and it's not sustainable. You know, it just is what it is.
Yeah. I want to transition into a different topic, one that – I'm super excited to talk about. You're the head coach and general manager of We Are D3, which is a team that plays in the TBT. I'm just going to describe a little about the TBT. TBT, the basketball tournament, is an annual tournament played through different basketball players. It's 64 teams, each team with their own identity. For example, Boeheim's Army is Syracuse alumni. We Are D3 are people that have been involved with Division III for one season. So you're the coach and general manager of this tournament for $1 million prize for the winner. I just want to start at the top. Like, how did this process of you getting offered the job and actually accepting it come about?
Yeah, like, and it really kind of boils back to when I was at Amherst. When that group of seniors was graduating and they were looking for pro opportunities. I think we've all played and coached against Division III players that you're like, wow, could it go through the next level, so on and so forth. Andrew Olson, to try and get him, he was National Player of the Year two times, to try and get him a pro contract. I remember Coach Hicks and I, it was like pulling teeth. It was like ridiculous. And that's the best our division has to offer. And so like, it just stuck with me. And like those group did, a lot of those groups, you know, I think we had 5 or 6 players go on to play pro, but it just really was difficult to get them pro contracts. So like that kind of really stuck with me. And then as my coaching career evolved, I wanted to be more involved with bettering the opportunities of the division. And really when it came down to it, I'm sitting in my living room, you know, having a beer, watching, you know, TBT in the summer. And I was like, you know what? This is another platform for the division to showcase themselves, better contracts. And I think we could do well and perform under pressure if we got a good team together. Now, creating it was a grind because it had never been done before. And not for nothing, it's a lot of things where if I was a head coach at a university, I couldn't be able to do it because there's a lot of things. Is it a full-time gig? No. Is it a part-time gig? No. It is like that gray area where there's little things that you got to do throughout the year where if I was still a college coach, I wouldn't be able to do this. So like, you know, when it comes to talking with agents, talking with teams, talking with players, talking on the pro side, making the team kind of, it was a lot year one because I wanted to put out a good product for the division and we had to so that it could be sustainable for years to come. And now here we are kind of with a lot more growing that we're still doing and we're still going strong, but there's a lot of coming about it, you know, really posing it to TBT, posing it to the college coaches, posing it to the players to buy in because it wasn't done before, you know, it was very difficult year one. And it's still like now, like I look at how far we've come, like, you know, I have 80 some odd, you know, players that currently play pro. Year one, like there was like maybe like 20 D3 kids that were playing pro, and now it's continuing to grow and grow and grow and grow. I think have we played a small part? I would like to think, you know, we played a little bit of small part, kind of providing a little bit better opportunities for people. But I think just overall the division and kind of like what you guys do, what the D3 Hoops guys do, and kind of like us as a community have done, and kind of with the awareness of social media and things like that, it has continued to grow the division. Because in my mind, like really, it goes Division One and Division Three. In my mind, Division Two doesn't even exist.
No D2 slander on the pod.
No, but it's all good.
Yeah, I want to continue talking about the TBT, but first, I'm kind of interested. You talked about how Toomey, he struggled to get any looks basically from
Olson,
the pro world.
And Toomey a little bit too. Toomey a little bit also, too, yeah. Yes.
So obviously it was tougher for Division III athletes to move on into the pro world. And you touched on some of the reasons that might be the case, but I'm curious just to hear your perspective on one, like a little bit more about how that's happened and from 10 years ago to now, and where you see the future of what Division III athletes can, how they can continue to evolve into the pro world.
You know, I think the narrative of Division III is starting to change in the U.S. I think it's starting to change. It's still got a long way to go, but it's still changed. Overseas, it is still back with in the 80s. They still think that, you know, basically, you know, and I see it with my job at NCSA and IMG when I'm talking with families. I'm like, hey, what are your goals? And well, you know, I'm going to try for Division One, but if not, I'll just go play Division Three. Okay. Like, it's like so ridiculous because the talent level at this division and, you know, your job as a head coach is to recruit and things like that. So going to play pro, you know, the narrative, the opportunities over the course of 10 years are light years more just because I think information is more accessible out there. I think a lot of players like have come through the pipeline, like John DeBartolomeo from Rochester. He's still playing over at Maccabi Tel Aviv in Israel and doing great there. I think he was one of the players that also helped kick down the door for a lot of these. So Division III players started to realize, hey, it is an opportunity. Like, I can have a great career, get a good degree, and I can still go play pro. And I think that's continuing to be more of an opportunity for our division. But overseas, getting those opportunities, if you're just a scorer, they're not going to – you better be, like, the top scorer like we have. You better be bringing something else to the table, because if you're just a scorer – and I've seen it time and time again, your career is going to be darn short. You're going to be going to, you know, you might get a glimpse in the G League. You might get a glimpse in some random country like, I don't know, Armenia, Albania, or China, or whatever, you know, Malta, whatever. But you better be bringing something to the table. Otherwise, you're going to be home real quick doing basketball training on the side. It just is what it is. So you better figure it out. And I think, like, that's where the overseas teams want to see that. They know we play, you know, the prototypical stereotype of D3, where we're very smart basketball players. We hustle and we shoot threes. We have zero athleticism. We have zero, like, defensive tenacity, like, all that type of stuff. So, like, you have to – that narrative, you got to convince the overseas coaches, because these are coaches that come from a background – where European basketball and just overseas basketball is different than how it is in the United States. Like, it's like, you know, I heard something that Gino Auriemma said, where overseas, like, they're practicing 6 days a week and playing one game. Whereas here in the US, it is flipped. And that's why they have the edge. And I agree with that. But that's where, like, if they don't see solid fundamentals and things like that, like, it's going to be very difficult. But I think the availability of film online, presence, things along those lines has helped the division for the same reason. I don't think, like, the diamond in the rough recruit is no longer, is very difficult to find right now, because you now, it's almost like you have to recruit off a projection. Yeah. Like everybody is a known product with the amount of social media that's out there, film. If, you know, even kids in Idaho in some town, like random podunk town, can get recruited now from nationally. So I think like that's where the awareness is different now, but that also means you got to be bringing something different to the table. But I think that the narrative is just lagging a little bit overseas still.
Yeah, that's great words. And we're going to continue talking about some Division III basketball and a little bit more about the TBT after the break.
And we're back. So, you know, I think this is another interesting discussion. We talked about it with Coach Riley in terms of like the level of play of Division III and how it has maybe evolved over the last couple of years. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on this because, you know, in my own conversations with some of my friends or people involved with Division III, I feel as though that, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic with the extra year of eligibility and the transfer portal has kind of brought an influx of a lot of high, you know, potential, you know, scholarship, high level and scholarship level talent into Division III. I'm not saying there wasn't, you know, high level talent before, but I just feel like there's been an influx. So I just wanted to hear what have you seen over the last couple of years and what do you think the future is for Division III basketball?
Yeah, we're kind of in like this figuring it out phase. The COVID year, I think this will be the last year. It really kind of affects us this year. But what I've seen is perennially the heavy hitters. And Coach Riley, you know, is a part of that conference of the NESCAC. Trinity made it deep this year. But reality is, like, as a conference whole, it's been kind of affected. Like, normally, you know, you've had 20 top 25s left and right. Where it's like five or six teams of NESCAC, five or six teams of UAA, and things like that.
I've been saying this.
Now it's different because now you got schools that trying, not for nothing, like, yes, they've been on the up and coming, but they had an influx of transfers. They have a couple more coming in this year. Mm-hmm. Case Western, I think, never had good years. I mean, they had good years, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I mean, never like Final Four quality years before, and now they've basically made their brand. Coach McGinnis has really tapped into it and made their brand on finding transfers. I think the flip side of it, you're having small programs that work to develop players. Like I'll take you know, Worcester State, for instance. They have a great player that is now in the transfer portal and he's going somewhere else. So you work hard to develop this player. They become conference player of the year, and now they leave you as a coach. And like, credit to that player because they're bettering their opportunity, right? Which is awesome. And I think that you've earned that. But I think also for the program that you're leaving, it's almost like you got to figure that out as well to fill that void. So we're kind of the division as a whole, we're just like Division I, II as well. You're living in this transitional flux. Right. And I think like nowadays, Division I's catching on saying, hey, we're going to continue to take the best player from this team. And I just saw like McAllister, the dude that put up 41 against Minnesota, is now going in Minnesota. And like, maybe he'll be with us in TBT in 2 years. Like, I have a pulse on that stuff. But for to coach Division III right now, it's very unique where I think in the upcoming years, as we get further away from COVID, I think you'll start to see a return of the blue bloods. I think with NESCAC and UAA will continue to dominate the top 25 polls, and ODAC this year a little bit too as well, because I think now you don't have that fifth year of eligibility of grad year types of stuff. Because like, if you look at it, like Coach Riley had Sam Peak ended up going to Stetson. Okay. You have Middlebury, you have Alex Sobel. He goes to Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. So like, these are players that are now whole 4 year careers, because you're never going to leave a NESCAC school to go somewhere else, because the degree you're getting at a NESCAC school is going to make you $1 million.
Yep.
You know, so like, it's not like you're like going to basket weaving tech and saying, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else. No, and same with like a school like Brandeis, Carnegie Mellon, NYU, things like that. These are teams that like NYU benefited from the transfer portal. But I think the blue bloods of Division III will start to return. Mm-hmm. I do. I think also Division III realized that there's this whole pool of the transfer portal where now, hey, we can get our fix too. You know, you're going to come in. All right. Yeah. You know, maybe you didn't play a lot of Eastern Michigan, but hey, you're going to start for me and you're going to be an All-American in 1 year time. And you can still go play pro and you can mm-hmm. still do this. So like, I think it's a resource that the division now has tapped into. I think it's changed. I don't think there's any way we're going back. I think it's almost like anything that happens at Division One eventually trickles down to us. Like you got now teams like Marietta College, who now has NIL Collective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how you battle that. Like, I mean, if you're a school and you don't have an NIL, like D3, that's smart by Marietta. But how many Division III schools are going to have those resources? Yeah. Only the blue bloods, I'm telling you. But I think like that's where it's – in order to win now, you have to be old. You can't be young. You have to be old because that's where the teams are. They're old, trying, old, right? Like Trinity, old. But Trinity just lost their best player, Ben Callahan Gold. He's going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, these are all you're getting older. Division One's getting older for the same reason why Oakland beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, because they were older. They were more experienced. So, the rule of thumb now is get old, stay old. Like, if you're a team that can get in transfers at D3, get in transfers. You're going to win. If you can recruit JUCO.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're going to win at any level right now with freshmen, not going to happen. Mm. Not going to happen whatsoever. Or you better have a good senior class around them to cultivate.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, coaches, you're one of your advice to winning is get old, stay old. And Division III, the model is – not necessarily to push athletics. So do you think that that's a positive thing for Division III, the transfer portal, or do you think it's kind of like going in that gray area of what Division III is really supposed to be?
It's going in the gray area of what Division III is supposed to be. Like, and I think like that's where right, wrong, or indifferent, us as coaches, we're very narrow-minded in the fact that, like, hey, you know, this is what we do. This is our athletics is what it's all about, and the culture of the school and things like that. So, I do think it goes against the motto of Division III. I just know basketball, winning, jobs are a business, and not for nothing. Like, you better keep up with the business, or you get got. And that's something like I think the elder statesmen understand. But I think, you know, and the young blood, I think you're not going to see coaches have long tenures. I don't think really anymore. I just, the Coach Hickson's of 42 years, not going to happen anymore. Coach Riley at Wesleyan, he's been there a while. He's very blessed, great coach, great recruiter. I just think he's now an enigma in the division. Yeah. I think Pat Juckum at WashU is going to be those are enigma scenarios because they're great schools, great programs. I just think it's not the norm right now. You're going to see more and more coaches, you know, jump every 4 or 5 years. Like the Nichols coach just jumped. You're going to see more and more of that, I feel like. I just think the long tenured coaches, for the most part, unless you're at a high profile job, or it's pretty much a wrap.
One thing I wanted to say too, you know, while you were talking about, when I asked you about the increase in high level players mm-hmm. and while you were talking about it, I think also another thing that has kind of influenced that is like, I think players making it like cool to be in D3. And what I mean by that is I feel as though when I was a kid, I feel like the narrative of D3, and we've talked about that, how the narrative has shifted. But when I was a kid, I feel as though, you know, maybe some kids are like, oh, no, it's D1 or bust, whatnot. But then when you go, like, I remember vividly watching Ty Nichols play, who played at Keene State out in Lowell. And, like, I was like, yo, he's playing Division III, Keene State. Like, this is crazy. This is the type of hoopers they have. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, like, and, like, D Friga, I know he's not on, like, the We Are D3 team or anything, but, like, his content producing, like, him talking about his journey in D3 has, like, influenced a lot of players to be like, yo, like, it is cool and, like, there's still talent at this level.
100%. And I think it's just continuing to bring awareness out there, like, because, like you talked about, you know, Friga puts out great content, awareness, all that stuff. His vibe with street ball and how to play it, awesome for the division. Mm-hmm. I think Ty Nichols, thank God he's with us. Because that dude is a freaking killer. And not for nothing, he's one of the best players I have ever had the pleasure of coaching. Mm-hmm. And by coaching, I mean just say, hey, you do you, and I'm going to be over here. and that's one of those situations where no matter who he plays for, he just makes everybody better. And he makes the coach, you know, look good because he's that type of a player and a great, great young man for sure. Yeah. I'm very blessed to know him and be able to coach him. But you're absolutely right. I think that that awareness and continuing to do the stuff that you guys do and what D3 Hoops does and da-da-da-da-da, I think we all play our small part of kind of changing it out there. And you know, players like, I agree, like Friga, Nichols, DeBartolomeo, Toomey, Andrew Olson, the list goes on and on of all these pros. And I have like, you know, 70, 80 more that I could list that are doing their own jam to kind of change that narrative, which has been kind of really cool to see.
Yeah. So I think this is an interesting discussion too, just about the transfer portal. And I was, when we were doing research for this episode, I listened to one of your interviews with the D3 Datacast guys, shout out to them. And you talked about how, you could see, you know, D3 schools becoming feeder schools to Division I and even possibly to Division II level. And, you know, it made KJ and I kind of wonder, how can coaches prevent high transfer rates and create programs that entice the students to have, you know, the amazing four-year experience that is Division III basketball?
Yeah. I've thought about this a lot. And I really think it boils down to one thing. And it's the relationships. If you're a coach that is strictly transactional, meaning, hey, you're good, get stats, great, whatever, but not vested in the student athlete themselves and kind of knowing, you know, just really kind of wrapping, you know, knowing family, knowing, building a culture of a program. You know, and you still might lose kids, but you might not lose. You're not going to lose as much. I think if you have a culture really developed where that student athlete knows that you genuinely care about their well-being, you're genuinely trying to help them benefit their opportunities. You're not limiting them. And really, you have the support system around them. I think you can limit it. I still think it's going to happen.
Yeah,
but I think like if you have a supportive system and a culture, a winning culture, and winning culture, I mean, not necessarily wins on the court, but really like you have players that really genuinely have awesome experiences. They come back for alumni days. They really, you have it kind of roll in those regards. You have an administration that really starts to really buy into what you're doing. I think then you can limit it. If it's strictly transactional, being like, hey, I'm recruiting you. Okay, great. Go out there and you don't talk to that kid for 2 months after the season, or you don't really care what how they're doing in the classroom, or you don't care. You know, you're one of those coaches that really just is always on the road recruiting and not besting in your own program. Then you're going to lose them. I really do believe that. I think it will still happen. Yes. But, I think you have to develop that culture around you to really almost like insulate yourself from the outside noise, because you have to make that student athlete who averages 20 a game, who is an All-American, stay at home base rather than go to a Division I or D2. Then you better have everything in place, being like, hey, you know, what you get here and how I can help you get to where you want to go, then I think you can keep them. But yeah, if you're not that type of coach, then you're going to lose them. It just is what it is.
Yeah. So I want to go back to some TBT talk. In your career, not to slight you or anything, but your own five in the TBT. So yep. I just want to start with you talking about this year's roster, some of the advantages you guys have, and how you plan to get a win this season.
Yeah. And I think, like, yeah, 0-5, but I treat every year like it's a different season. Mm-hmm. Like, because the players are different every year. Like myself, Jay Harris, David Clark, my staff and I, we're the same. But the players are pretty different every year in and year out. You know, we've established now a pipeline where we do have returners come back and things like that. But there are players that, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, like, age out. And that's just a factor of life. Like, you know, it just is what it is. So I think there are good seasons and bad seasons. Like last year, I think, was a good season. You know, we lost to Kansas. On a putback off of a free throw of a missed box out. That's a tough one to swallow for 8 months. I can tell you that much. But as I reflect back on it, that's a good season. The year before, we got blown out in Wichita. Crappy. Not good. A losing season. So, like, you have to compartmentalize it like that. I think when it comes to our team this year, the players that won with us last year, all of them are back. Ty Nichols, Marcus Azor, Demetrius Underwood, Malik Larquette, Adam Fravor, they're all back. Josh Treadwell back. Those are all players that are winners in my book. Now, when you add in some of the newbies, and pretty much you guys can pretty much guess who the newbies might be. Basically, if you're a player of the year, then yes, they're probably with us. But, like, you know, I think with the newbies additionally, I think they're going to be the ones that really kind of get us over the hump. And I think, like, not for nothing, we're now a known quantity where people in TBT in the pro world know that we're coming, and we're not an underdog anymore. We are a known commodity. And now the narrative has changed to, it's like that guy, it's like the team that's on a losing streak, like with the Pistons this year. You're like, you know, you're like, you don't want to be that team that gets got. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that they don't want to be that team that gets got. Mm-hmm. Because when it does happen, and it will, we're going to go on a run. Because, like, literally we played the number one seed in their home court every year. And it's about time that TBT does us a solid and say, hey, you've earned a better seed just because you don't have an NBA draft pick on your roster, but you play pretty damn good basketball. Yeah. So, you know, we will be playing in Dayton, Ohio on July 20th. And so, like, I think, like, you know, that's going to be an exciting time for us. Cause I do think that that's going to be a solid region for us to participate in. Wichita has been good for us, but not for nothing. The heat was kind of brutal. So let's go to Dayton.
Yeah. One thing that I noticed as well, in an interview you talked about how the TBT is great for the $1 million, but you're more focused on just getting the guys a spotlight. So I really respect that. And I want to talk about you're hosting a D3 combine in front of pro scouts. So the first question is, how do you get these scouts to come to the combine? And the second question is, do you think that there's a way for a player to prove himself in that combine to be on the We Are D3 team?
Yes and yes. And I think, like, so kind of growing the brand. Like, I look at We Are D3 as a brand. Yeah. Like, I think we've established ourselves now, blah, 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 types of stuff. And the way I got into it was to provide better opportunities for the Division III players. Kind of going back to my time at Emirates, like we talked about. And I can only accommodate 10 to 12 players each year, depending on how TBT tells me to make my roster. There's still a boatload of opportunity out there for other players. Like, yes, you might not be able to be with us because you have to be seasoned. Typically, like, it's very tough for a kid fresh out of a Division III school to come in and compete in TBT to go against a top three NBA draft pick. That's going to be a little bit different. You have to be seasoned. It just is what it is. I don't care how studly you are. There's going to be experience. And I think, like, that's where this pro combine idea, it started a couple years ago, but I wanted to do it right. And I didn't want to rush it. We had things in place where now, like, for instance, We Are D3 is trademarked. If you guys took this, you know, probably be worth like maybe 5 cents on the street, but you know, you can't use it. You know, for the same, you know, kind of, you had to get the company in place because now we're an LLC, we're a company. Things had to be aligned for us to do it right. The relationships that I built and my staff has built throughout the years of being involved now in this pro kind of gray area of talking with agents, I've kept all those in my Rolodex and kind of really worked to develop those relationships. Like, hey, you might not be able to play with us this year, but I know a couple agents that are looking for a wing that are going to help you. And they're good guys. Because I think, like, because, like, basketball pro, as you guys know, it can be a dirty business. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, like, you better have people in your corner that really have your best interests in mind. And so, like, developing those relationships throughout the years has made kind of the pro combine possible. You combine that with all these teams that are overseas looking for players, that players like a Ty Nichols right now, who got MVP of his league, absolute killer. Now all of a sudden pro teams are like, hey, you know, maybe we should check out some of these things. And, you know, we opened it up to, it's not just like for Division III, it's, there's going to be D2 players there. There's going to be Division I players that are there. It's just under our brand because, not for nothing, first and foremost, we want to help out just anybody looking for an opportunity. And so, like, the best way to do that is you got to have good film. You better be able to show that you have good film against not a team that's 0-20, because you're going to get that in Division III. You're mm-hmm. going to get the team that, like, gets, that's not going to help your cause at all. Helping your cause will go against another All-American. Helping your cause will go against another kid that played Division I. Helping your cause is putting all those players on the court and really gutting it out. And yes, at the pro combine, like, will we be looking for maybe one or two spots less? Absolutely. I mean, it's stupid if I didn't, you know? And so, like, yes, we're looking, but also the big picture is to, hey, let's get some more guys' contracts. Let's get some more guys' contacts with agents that are going to value them as a player. And let's start building this thing even more so that next year, maybe we have two sites going on, you know, and just overall helping, because there's so much talent this division has to offer. Maybe it is that prototypical kid that was a late bloomer, didn't play until senior year, had an all-conference year, and he's just beginning to scratch the surface. And then, like, let's get him in front of these opportunities where, like, hey, he can showcase himself against the best, or maybe you come from a low-level conference, or maybe you're a one-bid league where, you know, the winner is the only one that goes to the NCAA tournament, but you're pretty talented. So let's give them some exposure and some presence so that they can showcase their stuff to overseas teams. And kind of, it still stays within the mission of what myself and my staff got into We Are D3 with. But now we're also opening it up to, hey, anybody. And mind you, like, the price is like a joke. It's like $275, $300. Like, to go to a pro combine, it's normally like $500, $600, $700. Like, and our goal is to not make money off it. It's to, like, hey, cover logistics, let's make sure we put out a good product so that this continue can be building for years to come. And right now, numbers are awesome. The talent level's off the charts. It's very exciting for me to kind of get this off the ground. And then next year, like, you know, maybe we run one or two sites, or maybe it becomes a 2-day event. I don't know. But the feedback that we're getting, it's all because of a lot of people buying into us and kind of like what you guys do, the Division III mission. They love like what they do because, quite frankly, nobody's done it before again. So, you know, if I can continue to help kind of kick down doors for opportunities for some of these kids, like, awesome. Like, that's how, like, ultimately I feel good about myself at the end of the day, where, yeah, I'm a coach at heart, but at the same point in time, like, I got into this to be an educator, to help out opportunities for kids. Like, if you're like a player like Daquan Davis, who's going to be playing with us, who played at Arcadia and then went to Division I, and now he's grinding. He already played pro in Ireland and killed it, but he's coming to the combine to better his opportunity, better maybe his agent, get some more film and better him, and he'll be hopefully maybe playing with us. Hmm. So it's all about that. It stays within the kind of the mission and timing of kind of what we do, and I think we'll continue to learn how to evolve it after year one, just like how we did evolve, you know, kind of the makeup of TBT, you know, now that we're in year six or year five or whatever the heck year we're in.
I wanted to say, I think that's really dope, just that you're sticking true to, you know, why you got into coaching, right? You wanted to help out kids at the end of the day. Like, you know, it's not about the wins that you may garner, or the, you know, the recognition that you may garner. It's about, at the end of the day, providing opportunities for the next generation of D3 hoopers that will only allow us and just for D3 just to grow. And I think that's dope. I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate that. You know, and I think, like, largely, like, that's why, like, you know, Coach Hickson's one of the GOATs as well.
Yeah.
Because of relationships. Like, he could give two cruds about, don't get me wrong, he loves winning. I love winning too. but at the same point in time, like, you know, like his alumni days, like if you were there when the court got dedicated to him, you're talking about multi-generationals going there to see that court be dedicated. And then for him to be the first Division III coach to be inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Not for nothing. Yeah. Like, my kids asked, like, hey, are you in the Hall of Fame? I was like, no. But I am in a picture with Coach Hickson somewhere in there. And I think, like, that's where kind of just that ethos of our division, relationships. I think it all boils down to relationships. And I think, like, you know, in this life, no matter what you give, it's all about what you give, not what you get.
So just to wrap it up a little bit, this has been a great episode. I really enjoyed, you know, talking to you. And just on that same line of helping out, you know, just players and giving them opportunities. So you obviously work for the NCSA, which is a recruiting organization that basically teaches middle school and high school student athletes about the college recruiting process, mm-hmm. right? And I just wanted to ask you, and I think this would be really helpful for a lot of the incoming players just coming into college or looking for another opportunity. What do you think high school athletes should understand about what coaches are looking for at the next level?
We don't care about your AAU team you play for. What we do care about, like, hey, like, at the end of the day, it boils down to, how are your grades? Do you have film for me to evaluate you? Who you are as a character? Like, all those things kind of matter. I don't care, like, if you're on some Nike circuit, whether I was at Division I or not, like, and things like that. Like, it's more so, like, who you are, and are you – I'm assuming you can score. But what else are you bringing to the table? I think it boils down to kind of whatever that coach's ethos is, like, whether it be if it is defense, if it is overall in terms of kind of their scheme of kind of what they look for, like big, long wings or whatnot. Those things kind of factor in. And I think that's where doing the little things matter. Like, I always look for little things. Like, Ty Nichols is a great player, but he does all the little things. All the little things, and he'll sell out. How you are as a team. You know, it's like the old cliches that we all hear. Like, be a good teammate and da-da-da. They're cliches because they're true and they matter. Like, are you like, and I think like that's where I always like when I'm talking to recruits, I'm always filtering in like, hey, yeah, I know you have goals of playing at, you know, Texas, but I'm telling you, Mary Hardin Baylor down the road is a pretty damn good option too. And same with Trinity of Texas and things like that. And I think like that's where bringing an awareness to them that, yes, like you might not be like 7 foot, whatever, but like you learn pretty quickly in high school. I did pretty much as well. Like, hey, like, yes, I'm not going to have that opportunity to play at UMass. Maybe I have an opportunity to play at Springfield and like have a great experience and things like that. And then you kind of evolve. But I think when it comes to high school in today's day and age, what I see parents, the pitfalls, they invest exorbitant amounts of money that they really don't have to. Exorbitant amount of money, which it's not necessarily like, hey, I'm going to put my kid, and I'm dealing with my daughter AAU. She practices with a team, but like the team stays relatively local, right? It's not a national team where like people forget, like, yes, you pay your dues for your team, but they ain't paying for your hotel room. They ain't paying for the travel. They ain't paying for the $40 parking at Spooky Nook. They're not paying for the admission fee that on top of it, like times four. Like I saw something online where a coaching buddy of mine, his first AAU weekend, he didn't even get in the door yet. And he already dumped like close to $500. Like, it's like ridiculous, you know? And at the end of the day, us coaches, I would much rather see you practice. Spend that money on a trainer to get your shot right or learn how to pull up off the dribble. Like these things that we, I think, just as a society are skewed. But I think like that's where don't get caught up in the noise. And I think really do the little things. That's what's going to get you recruited. But you also got to be proactive in your recruiting process so that I can recruit you appropriately. Because I guarantee you, for me to notice you at an AAU tournament or something like that, you're going to have to put up like close to 30. You are, because there's just too much noise. But if I know, hey, I got to recruit KJ or Neruda, and they're going to be a wing at 11 o'clock on court three, well, then I can evaluate the nuances to your game. You have to get me there to evaluate you. But it's not like if I'm just showing up not knowing you guys, then you better be putting up some big numbers. Yeah, like it just is what it is.
Yeah, that's a conversation that I feel like we could talk about forever. But I really appreciate the advice. A lot of people should definitely take that wholeheartedly. But we've been recording for a while, so let's get into Rapid Fire and Starting Five Edition whenever you're ready for Rapid Fire.
Let's go.
All right.
Perfect. So I saw this on Twitter. D3 Direct posted this. But what do you think the best D3 college town is?
Amherst. Amherst College Town, because you got UMass there, you got Amherst College there, you got Smith College, you got Mount Holyoke, you got Hampshire College, the kind of lesser, more on obviously the female side of things. So that entire campus climate was awesome for me in my young 20s. And I met my wife there. So yeah, like, yeah, hey, it worked out. It worked all out. Good. Absolutely, I would say I am 100% biased, but I will also, from an objective viewpoint, just giving all those alignment, Amherst, Massachusetts.
I like that. What has been your favorite TBT stop? Like favorite place to play in?
From an arena viewpoint, Wichita, because that place is rocking. It's a dome where the just the noise just carries on you. As far as like an experience playing, that is the loudest gym I've ever coached in. And that was an amazing, because there's nothing in Wichita. There's literally nothing but the Shockers. And they, ever since they had those Final Four runs, It's crazy, but that was it was Wichita by far.
And then last rapid fire question, most underrated D3 conference.
That's a tough question, bro.
That's a tough one.
You could give multiple if you want, if you don't want to.
I do think just because outside of your both respective conferences, I will give shout outs to you guys.
Okay.
At Alfred and Utica. Outside of those respective conferences.
Yes, yes.
I will I think the margin of because of transfer portal stuff and things like that, I think the gap is closing. I do. Parity is crazy. Mm-hmm. I do think just because regionally, I think the California conference is vastly underappreciated just because over here in the Northeast, like Division III is like a way of life, right? Mm-hmm. It's like kind of like D3, D1. Okay, you go to Alfred. Okay, I know where that is. Okay, you go to Utica. Awesome. Right down the street from the casino. Cool. You know, things like that. You know, like that's dope. But like California, like there's nothing in Kansas. There's no D3s in Kansas. That's why Wichita for us in TBT was not really a good fit because people are like, wait, Division III even exists? Yeah. And we're like, yeah, dude. Like, but the California schools kind of are on an island. Kind of like I think Claremont Mud Scripps and Pomona Pitzer and, you know, that entire conference is very solid. I think they're underrated just because they're on an island out there, not because of talent. I think the Whitman-Whitworths, that conference is underrated just because the geographic separation between those conferences. I also think the Texas conferences, but it's the same reason. It's like from Texas, California on up, my terrible geography to hear. But it's those conferences are on an island because just the sheer number of D3s out there is very much less than what we have over here in the Northeast. And I think like that's I just think that they're underappreciated just because, you know, location and they're playing at a later time and all that types of stuff.
Yeah. All right, we're going to end this episode with a little starting five edition. If you're a coach assembling a starting five, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be TBT players you've seen. So any TBT player, and just give a sentence or two about what made them so good and where they, what team they were on.
Outside of my own team and players that I've coached.
Yeah.
Because I have my own favorites, but I will go from other teams and I will plug other teams. I'm going to go with, I think, Tyrese Rice, who won with Boeheim's Army. He was a phenomenal point guard. He's brutal, tough player that played defense as well. Like, just a really strong, stocky guard. I'm going to go with Eric Devendorf from Syracuse that we competed against my second year. I felt just – he was older in his career, but you could still see how he navigated kind of his IQ to the game and could still shoot the crap out of it. I'm going to go with a small guard lineup. I'm going to go with also Marcus Keene, who played at Central. I think it was Michigan, who played at Sideline Cancer, who's one of the all-time leading scorers in Europe, who's doing phenomenal.
He played with Boeheim's Army recently, right? Didn't he switch teams?
Might have this year. And then kind of along those same lines, I'll go with Jimmer Fredette because you can't miss Jimmer. And because he's like just, you know, bucket getter. For one of the best centers, you have forward centers, Jalen Barford, who played at Arkansas, who's unreal scorer, and he'll be kind of back this year. As far as true center, the best one was last year against Thomas Robinson from Kansas. He was like a top three NBA pick, and just his physicality and how that team that we played last year has made me rethink some things of how I coach in TBT because they did some things that I think from a physicality viewpoint, from a way they exposed us, our weaknesses, made me better prepared this year, hopefully, for if we were to potentially see a team like that again. And largely it's because of Thomas Robinson, because that dude is unreal. Kind of how he just plays the game. I just think there's a difference between pro and NBA top five pick. There really is. Like, and I think like that's kind of my journey, has really understood there's different levels to this game that we all love. And there's certain levels that you're like, okay, I see why now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that'd be my five. Yeah, I give you six, but whatever.
I like that.
That's a tough lineup. That's going to do it for another episode. Not Even D2. We appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a long time coming, and we're big fans of everything you've done for the D3 world and continue to do so. Shout out to you. And definitely looking forward to watching We Are D3 in the TBT tournament. You said July 20th?
July 20th. Have me on before then. We'll do like a whole preview episode. We'll get all my croonies back. It'd be great.
Let's do it.
But absolutely. But, you know, I really appreciate, like, I love the brand that you guys are producing, the content you're producing. I think you guys do it in a really classy manner. You know, you guys, you know, have a great career in this. So keep it up and you know, best of luck to both of your teams and obviously, you know, your careers as well. I'll be watching because I'm a D3 nerd and watch everything. And if you guys want to come to the combine or anybody out there wants to come to the combine, you know, by all means, give me a shout on, the We Are D3 handles, or myself directly. You guys are more than welcome to come. Even if you just want to, any coaches out there just want to come check it out for the day, you guys are more than welcome to. We'd love to have you. It should be a good time. And, you know, thanks again for, you know, having me on. It's been a blast.
Appreciate you, coach.
Yeah, that's love, coach. Well, appreciate you and good luck. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.